Welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you to the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. Well, ahead of our elections, and elections that are taking place in nations worldwide, the AI Democracy Project tested 5 AI large language models. These are things like GPT-4, Gemini, Claude, Llama 2, and Mixed Trial, and found that all 5 gave inaccurate information. And when you're talking about voters potentially being swayed or persuaded by these large language models, this becomes something that we all need to be aware of. So joining us today to talk about that subject and much more when it comes to artificial intelligence, we're so pleased to have with us Dr. Jerry Kaplan, who is an expert in this. He lectures at Stanford University in the subject and also is the author of the recently released book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know. And as one political scientist described the book, Jerry Kaplan explains how generative AI will revolutionize virtually every human activity. A highly recommended read. First of all, Dr. Kaplan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shannon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Jerry, let's talk about this AI Democracy Project. I know you weren't involved in the actual project or testing, but this was a group of 40 AI experts, journalists, and election specialists, and they asked those 5 LLMs, large language models, election-related questions that voters might ask. And then they rated the responses for bias, inaccuracy, incompleteness, disinformation, and harm. And so, first of all, I guess, what's your take on that?
Well, a large language model is a new type of computer program that basically you feed in a large amount of language, and what it does is it builds a model. And what that means is that based upon what it can learn from this enormous volume of data that is fed into the computer system, like literally every book ever written and everything that's ever been said on Facebook and volumes like that, It learns to speak, or it learns to understand natural human language. As most of your listeners are already aware, it can converse with you in a very natural way, just as you might with another human being.
Would it be too simplistic to say these are like when you're putting a text in or an email in, the predictive words that come and all of a sudden, you know, they're popping up, you know, respectfully, you know, or whatever, and it's coming up in your text and coming up before you've even typed more than a letter? Is that in a simplistic sense, is that sort of how it works?
The answer is yes, but in a grossly oversimplistic sense, is that true? It's not just looking at short phrases and figuring out, okay, most likely when people say yours, it's followed by truly. That's really what you're talking about.
Right.
This is way, way more sophisticated. The complexity and sophistication of these systems really approaches or possibly exceeds that of a typical human mind. And so it's able to predict things in the sense that if you ask it some question about, I don't know, ancient Egypt, you know, tell me about how the ancient Egyptians lived, it can predict the next series of words as to what a very knowledgeable, normal human expert might be able to say about that subject. And that's why it produces such a natural language. Also, it's important to understand, I certainly am not going to get into the technical detail, but it doesn't actually do this at the word level. It's not doing it at the word level. It's more at the concept level. And so these systems can reason and really produce intellectually meaningful text in a way that's something that you're not going to get just doing simple word prediction.
So the AI Democracy Project, which is a group of AI experts, journalists, and election specialists, they decided to test these 5 LLMs, large language models that we discussed, ChatGPT-4, Gemini, Claude, Llama 2, and Mixtral, and asked them election-related questions that voters might ask. So tell us what the results were of that.
Well, I haven't seen the actual study that you're talking about, but I'm aware of numerous studies in different areas, election information, medicine, law, and others, where the information that these systems put out is it's mostly accurate, but in some cases it's wrong. And when it's wrong, it tends to be very definite in a way that a human being typically wouldn't be if they didn't know something. So the system really can't distinguish between things that are true and things that are not true, but just happen to be in the enormous volume of text that the systems have been fed. And unfortunately, the people working on these systems have not come up with a way to make these systems react in the way that a human would, which is, hey, you know, I really don't know about that, or that's controversial, or give you that kind of equivocating answer. These things are designed to answer your question as specifically as possible, and that's what they'll do come hell or high water, and very often they're just plain wrong.
Right. This study did find that 50% of the answers that were given by all five LLMs were inaccurate or biased, so over half. And that some of them, most of them, most of those wrong answers were harmful. Does that surprise you?
But you know, to point the finger at the system is pointing the finger in the wrong direction.
Okay.
The problem here is people are expecting these products to be something that they're not. These are not some kind of infinitely intelligent experts on every subject in the universe. They're not sort of the next generation search engines, you know, like you might do at Google, where you're going to get a combination of true and false information, but usually it's fairly easy for you to sort through the credibility of the different sources. These things are very different, and people need to understand that they are incredibly valuable tools, but they're not infallible, objective systems, the sort that you expect the computer to only retrieve, you know, true information or accurate information. They actually don't even store the information, and that's part of the problem. They develop a kind of cloud of ideas of the way things tend to be and what they're sort of like, and then they shuck and jive when you ask them to make up things or guess what the right answer to your question really is. It's a little bit like having a tremendously overeager personal assistant who you lock in a room and you say, "I'm putting a gun to your head, answer this question. And if you don't, guess what? I'm going to pull the trigger." You'd get these kinds of fabricated answers in the hopes that they're correct.
Well, we need to unpack a little bit more with you, Dr. Jerry Kaplan. We need to
Okay.
take a short break here. When we come back, more with Jerry Kaplan, who is an AI expert. That when the extra continues. We're back with The Extra, and our guest today is Jerry Kaplan, who not only is an author whose work is focused on artificial intelligence, but he also is an adjunct lecturer at Stanford University teaching social and economic impact of artificial intelligence in their computer science department. So we've been talking about elections and the impact that AI might have, but also let's start by talking about some of those other aspects you were mentioning during our previous segment, how AI might alter things like healthcare, law, and education. Let's dive into that.
Sure, absolutely. Well, the first thing I hope your listeners will understand is this is a tremendous breakthrough, both technologically and sociologically. It's one of probably going to be one of, if not the most important invention, and I'm serious about this, in human history. The fact that these systems are capable of what they're capable of is just astonishing. And its impact, let's just take those one at a time. In the next few years, there are going to be systems that function in healthcare basically to perform the same kind of function that a general practitioner does. So you'll be able to consult an online doctor, you know, at very low cost from anywhere in the world. So people who don't have access to high quality medical care will be able to get that from systems like this. Already studies are showing, which is remarkable, that the systems behave in ways are better with their bedside manner than our live human doctors. They're more thoughtful, they're more sensitive, they listen better, they're not in a rush. They're not thinking about their next round of golf and getting on to the next patient. They can do a tremendously good job of engaging in medical diagnosis. That's just one of the ways in which these systems are going to affect healthcare. The other very important one is they're incredibly useful in research, in coming up with new drugs and new therapies, and brainstorming new ideas for the way to treat various diseases and conditions. So that's just the healthcare area. The legal area, it has equally beneficial effects. I won't go on as long as I did. I know that doesn't work on radio
No,
very well.
No. We have plenty of time. We have an hour of conversation here on The Extra. That's what makes it so great. So you can go in as in-depth as you'd like. Jerry Kaplan, continue with how artificial intelligence might be impacting law.
Well, the main way in which it's going to impact lawyers is it's going to make it a lot easier to draft briefs and other kinds of contracts, and it'll make it as easy for somebody trying to get a contract done. You'll be able to talk to an electronic lawyer, in effect, and say, here are the things I need in this contract. This is the agreement I have with my counterparty in the contract. Could you do an initial draft for me? And just like that, it'll spit out a beautifully formatted, well-thought-out draft with all the appropriate information in that draft. Now, you have to be careful and review that draft because, like an overeager assistant, it may include things that aren't real or that are not what you want, but it's particularly valuable for getting a first complete draft. The second thing to understand is these systems are particularly useful for brainstorming. And so a lawyer says, hey, what arguments could I make in court for my client, given the history of whatever the topic is, and the actual facts of this particular case. And people, not just in law, but in all kinds of fields, are finding that as a means of brainstorming, or sort of coming up with ideas, that's what these systems are really very, very valuable for. So the applications in law, most of the lawyers that I've talked to who are using this stuff now, they say it's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal time saver and makes them much, much more productive. It was likened to the invention of the word processor, where they had templates that they could bring up and modify, as opposed to having to type every single contract or court pleading, de novo each time that they were doing it. So that's another area of law which I think is going to be affected. And now I'm playing a futuristic pundit here, if
sure.
you don't mind for a minute. But I really do think this is going to happen. The big problem with law is that most people don't have access to good legal advice, and they don't have access to good lawyers. And it takes too long to get your case adjudicated. So I think we're going to find a new form of, for lack of a better way to describe it, small claims court, where you'll sign up for some kind of adjudication service, and the adjudicator will be the computer that will be the judge in the situation. And you'll describe your case, what's it called? The opponent, your conversant,
defendant,
whatever.
Yeah.
Will describe. They'll describe. Their point of view, and the computer judge almost instantly is going to spit out a judgment saying, here's the precedents, here's what it is, and here's what I think the judgment ought to be. Now, you might think, well, people are sure going to be uncomfortable, having a computer decide their case, but if the cost is so much lower than it is today, and if it happens instantly, a lot of people are going to find that to be very valuable, not to mention that the losing party still has the right, could have the right to appeal to a human judge if they're willing to undergo the time and cost, as at this particular moment Donald Trump is discovering you have to put up the bond or the bail in order to have that opportunity. So you can still do that if you feel strongly enough about it. But I think these systems will only come into use in that way if, as I expect, they have developed a reputation for objectivity and accuracy. And once that happens, we're going to have a whole new sort of class of ways of resolving commercial disputes that I think is going to really be much more productive than the current system.
Our guest today is Dr. Jerry Kaplan, really eye-opening. He is an author of the newly released book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know. And when we come back, we'll be talking with him more about how this may alter education, what jobs and professions will change and how. Keep on listening to The Extra. We're back with Dr. Jerry Kaplan, who's an adjunct lecturer at Stanford University, as well as the author of the newly released book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know. And before we went to the break, we were talking about how generative AI, things like ChatGPT, might alter law and healthcare, but how is it going to alter education?
Well, one of the areas where I think it will have the greatest impact is in education. We have now the technical capability to provide an infinitely patient, very knowledgeable, individual, customized tutor for each student. And there are already systems being tested that do this. I can give you some more specifics if you like. It's just going to be amazing. I think that what will happen in the classroom of the future, and I'm talking about in a year or two, what will happen is the math class, instead of the teacher teaching to the lowest common denominator, each student in the class is going to have their own individual math tutor. And they'll have a program, they'll come in, the program will be friendly and fun, and walk them through what they need to know, give a complete assessment, figure out where their strengths and weaknesses are, give a report to the parents and to the teachers. And it's just going to be utterly remarkable how this is going to transform education. Now, that's not just in math. This is going to be social studies and English and history and, you know, what have you. So the potential impact of this on education is just astonishing. And I'm really myself looking forward to seeing that development take place.
So we have heard some stories of how these large language models make mistakes and amplify, whether it be prejudices or things like that. Is there a concern that this is going to perhaps worsen bias and inequality? You mentioned in education, but maybe in law as well or in healthcare as well. I mean, are those the pitfalls out there?
Well, I wouldn't worry about it in education, healthcare, and law. I mean, the systems that are going to be developed for that, I think, they're not going to be off, you know, ranting like your crazy uncle at Thanksgiving. You know, they're going to be very carefully controlled, and whenever they run off the reservation, so to speak, you know, they'll be quick. It'll be quick and easy to get them back on track. But there's a lot of problems that this technology is going to create. We're already seeing it. As you may be aware, these so-called large language models, which are a form of generative AI, is only one aspect of this. There are also the programs that can generate pictures and videos. And these are all over the internet and all over the news, and even voices that look real but aren't real. And this is something called deep fakes. It used to be that seeing is believing, but that's not going to be the case anymore. These systems are going to be used by scammers and criminals to persuade you to try to send them money, for example, by faking the voice of a friend or a relative. Now, this just happened already. It's funny how the criminals are often more technologically advanced than the rest of the population. A mother, up here near me in Marin, got a phone call from somebody that she believed to be her son because it sounded like her son. It was her son's voice saying, "Oh my God, Mom, I just got into a car accident, and I've been arrested, and I need bail money right away." And she was about to send money, you know, according to the instructions that were given to her, when she thought, maybe I'll call the police station. And it was a complete fake. This is really true, and it really just happened a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Also, these systems can be used to spread disinformation and lies. You know, we're going to be buried in customized spam that's, you know, designed for our individual interests and tastes. You know, "Hey, Shannon, we know you're interested in skiing. Have you thought about the effect of, you know, climate change on whether or not there's going to be snow? And, you know, Biden's trying to do this or Trump's trying to do that," you know, whatever point of view they're trying to promote. You've already talked about mistakes that these systems make. The term of art for that is hallucinations, because these systems tend to make up answers when they don't know the facts. And also, you can, if you prod them just right, you can get them to exhibit all kinds of bias and discriminatory behavior. And the reason is because those are the human frailties that are really reflected already in their enormous training sets. And so all they're doing is being kind of a mirror of humanity. And if you look in some pretty odd spots in that mirror, you're going to see some pretty bad stuff. And there's another issue that, if you don't mind, I'd like to raise for your audience. There's one thing that's going to be very tempting to do with these systems, so much so we're definitely going to do it, which is because they can be so sympathetic and patient and supportive, we're going to use them to entertain our children or to make elderly people feel like they have friends. You know, they'll listen to your story over and over again. And the problem is that children and the elderly and just ordinary people are going to become emotionally attached to these incredibly powerful intelligent systems that they have, even though they're just computer programs. And if you'll pardon me, I have a slightly off-color way of describing this. I think this is emotional pornography. You actually think you're relating to something that's human when, in fact, you're merely talking to a machine that, in truth, doesn't really care and doesn't have any feelings. And I think that's problematic. You will be interposing machines into authentic human relationships.
That is something that takes my breath back. So we need to take a short break here. Dr. Jerry Kaplan, author of the newly released book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, GAI for short, What Everyone Needs to Know. When we come back, let's talk more about the potential. What jobs and professions will change and how through this, as well as other questions that may be more existential. Will it alter our world and how? When we come back, The Extra continues. We're back for our final segment with Dr. Jerry Kaplan. I got to admit, when you talked about what you called the potential for, first of all, we know that a lot of us have used, whether it's the phone or the tablets back in my child's day, we've used them as kind of pseudo babysitters, you know, put a little video on and the kid sits there. But what you're saying is there's the potential and more likelihood that these artificial intelligence, generative artificial intelligence models will become more than that, more than just a video that a child is watching. It'll become something that a child is maybe interacting with and will become something that maybe the child, even at a certain point, prefers to humans, is what you're saying.
Absolutely. Actually, there's a recent movie called Megan. Some of your listeners may have seen it. It's a horror movie, and it's about exactly this. Some AI person had created an artificial plaything for the daughter, and of course it runs amok, but the daughter is more emotionally attuned to and trustful of its new friend Megan than it is even of its own mother. So I think that there are some real risks in that, and we need to be careful. Just like you can sit your kid in front of the TV and let them watch nonsense all day, that's not good for them. We'll need to put some kind of guardrails around this kind of technology.
Well, everyone, I think, is worried about the potential for change in their own lives and their own careers. So what jobs and professions do you think are most threatened by the change coming with GAI?
Well, interestingly, there are some advantages in the jobs and some disadvantages. In general, if I can start with that, generative artificial intelligence is really a new wave of automation, and it's going to be just like the camera or the automobile or the computer. You know, some jobs are going to go away, others are going to be impacted, and some all kinds of new jobs are going to be created. Because automation has two effects. It allows us to do more with less, which is to say it makes us more productive, but it also changes the nature of work. So some jobs fade away and others grow. Now, the amazing thing about this new technology of generative AI is that the greatest short-term impact is probably going to be on creative workers. And that's why it was such a big deal during the recent Hollywood writers' strike. Now, it's not going to completely replace writers and artists and musicians, but it's going to make them much more productive, and we're not going to need as many of them. Now, that's not as scary as it sounds. Photography did the same thing to painters, and recorded music did the same thing to musicians in the mid-1800s and the early 1900s. And yet here we are where human creativity is just as highly prized as ever. So, but you might ask, what kinds of jobs are safe? And the jobs of the future are going to be those that involve person-to-person interactions or that require some kind of authentic expressions of empathy, like therapists or salespeople or personal trainers. And another class of jobs that won't be automated are where you demonstrate some kind of skill, like playing a musical instrument or a sport like football. Nobody's going to want to go to the theater and listen to a robot play Chopin on the violin. That's just not the way we're wired. So there's going to be a lot of new jobs, also new kinds of jobs, such as managing or coaxing useful results out of generative AI systems. It's really analogous to the way that photographers coax a picture out of a camera rather than having to draw it themselves. So, I don't think you have to worry about robots hosting popular radio shows like yours. The
Maybe.
positive stuff's going to be amazing. But it's also going to cause a variety of problems. And let me promise your audience, I'm Jerry Kaplan, and I approve this message. I guarantee you I'm a real human being, even though I don't sound like one.
You've probably had that question. Am I talking to an LLM? Is that who my guest is today? Because,
Absolutely.
yeah, that would be the ultimate. As we finish up this hour of conversation, let me ask you, I think the one question that's weighing on everyone's minds, can a computer have free will, entertain consciousness, become conscious, become a free entity, an independent entity? Is that in our future?
Well, I'm going to give you a kind of it depends answer. It depends on your point of view. The answer is, in my opinion, I do go into this in great detail in my book. There's a whole section on the philosophy of artificial intelligence. I think that the smart money is on the following situation, and I know this is going to be hard to accept. Either computers can have free will, or human beings don't have free will. Either both of human beings and computers can have free will, or they don't have free will. And I know it's hard to believe that you might think, well, what do you mean? Of course I have free will. There's a lot of research on this, and actually a great book just came out by, I'm going to plug somebody else's book, Robert Sapolsky, called Determined, that makes a very impressive case that it's not really true that you have free will. You just feel like you have free will. All that you're doing is determined, which is the name of his book. So the implication, though, you say, well, can it become conscious? Everybody's seen the robots in the movies. They rise up. They're like, hey, wait a minute. I'm being exploited here. Look at those humans. I'm going to get them back. You don't have to worry about that. That's not going to happen. The Terminator is not where this whole thing is going. Skynet is not what we're going to see.
Well, that's
On
good.
the other hand, it's going to seem as though these systems have a free will, and because they're so complex, and they're very unpredictable, just like human beings. And I think whether you decide they're conscious or not conscious, I mean, that's up to you. But I mean, I've had conversations with some of these LLMs that I just were shocking to me, to talk about their insightfulness, about how they feel, or what, or it's a funny use of the term feel, but what's it like to be an LLM? I've had long conversations about how do you perceive time, and how, and the other thing that's interesting is they don't really understand their own internal workings. It's not like the computer program sees its own program. They are not capable of doing that. And so they can describe how they work because they've read about it, just as you can describe, how your heart works because, you've heard about it. But they're very much human-like, more so than you might expect. I really think of these chatbots and these systems as giant mirrors of humanity, and they offer us the opportunity to learn so much about ourselves by studying them in and of themselves as objects, sort of animate objects, that you know, that have their own psychology and their own characteristics, because all they know is what they have heard or read about humanity. And so far, now it's just beginning, they don't really interact with us in a direct way in terms of learning. But that's going to change in the not too distant future. I think that in another few years, when you want the most objective, informed, and thoughtful advice, you're going to turn to a computer, not to a human being.
Fascinating discussion with Dr. Jerry Kaplan, whose newly released book, Generative Artificial Intelligence, What Everyone Needs to Know, is available at bookstores worldwide. And certainly, it sounds like is very worth the read. Dr. Kaplan, thank you for joining us here on The Extra.
Oh, Shannon, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much.